This is an interview with Mr. and Mrs. Frank Tarr for the Youngstown State University History of Salem Schools project at the home of Mr. and Mrs. Tarr, 951 Summit Street, on February the 12th, 1976, at 3:30 p.m. All right, first I'd like to ask both of you how you first became interested in education.
From the time I was in high school, I wanted to be a Latin teacher. That was the only thing that I was really interested in then, and I think probably I was influenced by the teacher that I had and the fact that I had two aunts who were teachers. I thought teaching would be a nice way to earn a living, and I was interested in, well, I liked Latin, and I was interested in trying to get other people to like it too.
I think I just drifted into it. I had nine sisters that were teachers and a brother, and my mother and father both taught. And then I, after graduating from college, I started in medical school at Ohio State and didn't have the finances to really finish. And so I left Ohio State and went to Kent and got enough educational credits to teach. And
back to you, Mrs. Tarr. After you made the decision that that's what you're interested in, based on members of the family that were teachers and so forth, where did you go from there after graduating from high school?
You mean to what university?
Yeah, to colleges.
University of Akron. Mm-hmm. I lived in Akron, and of course it was during the Depression, so I lived at home and went to the, it was a municipal university at that time, and the fees were rather low compared to other schools.
What all was involved in your training there, and approximately when was that?
From 1933 to 1937, I was in arts college and had an arts degree, and then I went an extra semester to get the teacher's credit.
And you, Mr. Tarr, you say you went to Ohio State. That was,
After graduating from Bethany College, and then I went back in 1934 to Ohio State and studied administration. And then in 1938, I went back and spent a summer at Ohio State. And then in 1941, I spent a summer in Kent State. Now, most of those courses were in philosophy and psychology and school administration.
Okay, generally then you both came into education through an influence by way of the family as much as any other single item. Nine sisters in your case, and two aunts in the other. How did you become interested in Salem, or let's say aware of positions in Salem, Mrs. Tarr?
I think we chose Salem because it was just about halfway between Akron and Toronto, Ohio, where our families lived, my family in Akron and Frank's in Toronto. And we had driven through here many times on our way to Toronto, and we liked the looks of the town. Thought it would be a nice place to live.
You already knew each other then, or had been,
yeah.
You say we decided we wanted to, or would like to teach in Salem. How did you go about securing a job? Did you know there were openings, or did somebody come after you, or how was it?
Well, this was 1944. We came to Salem. The situation where we were in Madison was not too stable at the time, so we decided to make a change, and you had put in several applications, hadn't you? 5 or 6 different places.
Yes.
And I guess just decided we'd like to be in Salem, and he came here. Frank started to teach here in 1944, and I taught at Fairfield that first year, and then I came in 45.
Mm-hmm. So you came from Madison,
Ohio.
having taught there.
Mm-hmm.
Did you know any faculty or any staff members or administrative personnel or anybody connected with the school system, other than the fact that you knew of Salem because it was close to both families? Did you know anyone else otherwise?
Mm-hmm.
No.
So you more or less came in the school system cold as far as personal contact.
Mm-hmm.
Superintendent at that time then was
Mr. Kerr.
Mr. Kerr. Every tape that I've done so far and other conversations that aren't taped, the name of E.S. Kerr comes up, and I don't want to pass him up at this particular time. I'd like to have some of your thoughts, perhaps even some feelings, or any knowledge you have of that gentleman since he played such a part in the Salem school system, and it seems as though everybody has comments one way or the other about him.
Well, I think he was a good administrator. He seemed to keep harmony, I think, in the system and among the teachers. I think he was very interested in the welfare of the teachers, as well as in education. I remember particularly one thing he used to tell us. He said, take the pupil at the point where you found him and teach from there.
I remembered that bit of philosophy that he gave us too about starting them where they are, and of the four administrators that I worked for, he was the greatest. He was, as Burl said, he was interested in the welfare of the student, and he was really interested in education. You got the feeling that that was his important, the most important thing that there was when you were teaching. And he told me one thing that I'll never forget about lecture method. He said, wherever possible, get things that students can see. In other words, he wanted you to use a lecture and demonstration.
Mm-hmm.
In science, naturally, it would come up. But he was a great advocate of that particular method of teaching.
In all the interviews I've done, as I say, as you can see by the list with administrators and teachers and just about everybody across the board, except former board members, they seem to be a little reluctant for some reason or other. But regardless of whether some people ever had a personal bone to pick with the man, it seems as though the impression was always left. It seems to be rather universal. Based on what you just said, that there was a high respect for him. I knew of him, but of course, never had any real adult contact.
I think most teachers were very satisfied here. There seemed to be a small turnover each year. And I think in the high school, I believe that he had a policy of hiring only experienced teachers as far as he could.
And he was an administrator that had had a lot of experience teaching. And that, I think that's why he understood the problems that teachers had. And he got his experience on firsthand. He was the fellow that had taught. I don't know how long he taught, but I know he'd had former experience in Canton as an administrator, and then before that he taught in some small systems like this.
So he had a lot of practical experience.
That's
not
right.
Just strictly administration, nothing
yes.
else. Or very little else.
Yes.
Different teachers particularly have indicated that they saw a lot of him, that they would look up and he would be in the classroom, or if clocks needed adjusted in the various elementary buildings, he took care of all of that. If the piano had to be moved, the prospect from the stage down to the gym floor, he wanted to be there when it was done. I think some people might get the impression that he was sort of a dictator, he had to have his finger on everything, but even if that's the case, teachers seem to have respected that.
This is what he told me at the interview. I remember something he said. He said, if we don't tell you anything, or if you don't see us, you assume that you're getting along all right. And he actually told me that.
In other words,
don't expect a lot of supervision.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, a lot of visiting at classes and so forth.
You say when he interviewed you now, did you both go through an interview with him?
Not at the same time,
because I was applying.
For...
You mentioned you began in 1945, but even though there was a year difference, did you actually have to go in and sit down and chat with him?
I could explain that.
Okay, yeah.
Well, I came, and at that time in Salem, two married people, husband and wife, couldn't teach in the same system. I mean, there was a general trend, and he had followed it. That's why Burl went to, she didn't even ask when the year that I took the job.
In 44.
In 44. And then he contacted me when he found out that Burl was teaching in Fairfield and asked her to come in for an interview. So that's the way she happened to get here. And there was a general trend. Two people, husband and wife, were not supposed to teach in the same school system. See, that was, the depression wasn't over. It was still a rather deep depression that we were in. And there was a feeling. I didn't know whether you were conscious of that or not.
This was unwritten policy,
yes. It was an unwritten law, but it just wasn't done.
So then, in 1945, the two of you were in the same school system.
Yes, she taught just 1 year.
And that, of course, would be at the school that I'm at now, junior high at North Lincoln. Do you have any recollections? Of course, you came into the school system with prior teaching experience. A lot of the people I've interviewed came to Salem first.
Uh-huh.
But I still ask a question. Do you have any recollections of the first year or so in the Salem school system?
Well, I don't know whether this belongs here or not, but I had the interview with Mr. Kerr, and then he sent me to interview one citizen in the community, Joe Kelly.
Mm-hmm.
And I talked with Joe, and we got along real well, and I liked it, and I came back and signed up, and then I went up and took a look at the laboratory, and I decided that I didn't want to be there.
This would be room 305.
Yeah, I mean, I had a better, much better laboratory where in the little place that I came from than I did here. And it was two rooms and a little cubbyhole built, about a 3x5 cubbyhole for storing chemicals and equipment and so forth. And the rest was just, but then finally I don't know how I changed my mind again, but a couple of students that were going to be in chemistry the next year helped me. I came back and we couldn't change the physical characteristics or anything, but they helped me clean up the stock room and the little stock room and so forth, and did a lot of work. And
well, at that time, was 305 and 304 all one big room?
No. There were just two rooms, just two 24 by 28 classrooms is all it was.
There was a connection, though, between the two?
Yes, there was a door between the two, and there was a demonstration desk in 305, and then the laboratory tables in 304. It hadn't been planned as a laboratory at all. It was just two classrooms.
It looks the same today as it did then,
yeah.
I suppose.
Yeah.
Now, I want to come back to you with regard to chemistry. You got a lot of questions here about several topics, but with regard to your teaching, when you came into Salem, did you teach Latin only the first
When I came year? To Salem, I didn't teach Latin until we went to the new building.
Oh, really? What were you involved in?
English. When I started, I taught English, too, sophomore English, and dramatics. They had a class in dramatics. I think I had that for 2 years, and then I think Irene Meeks took it over from there.
Peachy.
Mm-hmm.
What the kids call her.
Yes.
I never did, but I understand
yes,
that she didn't seem to mind either.
And, of course, I hadn't had too much experience in dramatics. I taught from the textbook, and Edith Cope and I together directed the plays. And then I was rather relieved when Irene Weeks took over the dramatics part.
You had dramatics in for 2 years.
I think it was 2 years.
What all was involved in that? How'd you go about selecting students or plays and rehearsal time and all that sort of thing? Do you recall?
Well, I don't recall too much about it. We had rehearsal after school most of the time, and then in the evening, toward the end, for the dress rehearsals. We chose the play together, I guess, the two advisors, and had the tryouts.
You didn't select students based on knowledge of their classroom abilities and speaking and so forth, or you had tryouts,
tryouts.
Anybody could get into
anybody
it at all?
Anybody could try out, I think.
I have tickets at home for The Wizard of Oz, which was in 1950, which would be a little later than you were involved in this. Do you happen to remember what you worked on in 1945 to 47, the two plays, or not?
No, I really don't.
How did it come about that Irene Weeks took over the operation?
I think she must have wanted to do it.
Well,
I think they probably needed me for more English classes.
You didn't teach Latin until you went to the high school, which would be
1958,
mm-hmm. which is, 58, 59, the year I went up there. Everybody, I guess, the first year as a sophomore.
Mm-hmm.
There were no freshmen there at that time.
No.
Mr. Tarr, in your chemistry room in 305, if you can call it that, the chemistry lab, you would have worked then with Mr. Jones, correct, in physics at that time, in the other room?
Yeah, well, no, he was at the 306, I believe, was the number of his room. It went 304, 305, 306. He had the physics lab.
The corner room.
In the corner room, yeah.
Do you remember anything at all about your first encounters with Herb Jones? He's another I guess you could use the word legend in the Salem, Salem school history.
Gosh, he was really a great guy. He was my kind of a person, really, because he was just as sharp as he could be, I knew that he was a terrific teacher, and there was no sham to him at all. I mean, he was just Herb Jones. That's all it was. He helped me a lot, really. I mean, becoming adjusted, it seemed like I'd known him a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And we were both interested in physical science, I don't remember the exact circumstances, but I think he took some overflow of students, and I think maybe he taught at about the same time. There was a sort of overlapping. I followed a man by the name of Doty from Worcester, who had taught chemistry the year before I did. I think that's spelled D-O-D-Y. And he was there only 1 year, but Herb had had the chemistry before. Herb was really an intellectual. He really was. You had to be pretty careful that you didn't make mistakes when you were talking to him, because he'd call you, or he had I think he heard that had a major in chemistry too.
Well, I had him for physics my senior year, 1961.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I never had anything but the total impression that the man thoroughly enjoyed teaching.
Yes.
But yet, in later years, even up till shortly before he died, when I'd see him uptown and walking through the alley there where he lived by the church, he never seemed to have too much nice to say about education. Tried to tell me to stay away from it. Don't major in education or don't get involved. And what do you suppose accounted for that?
Well,
was he that way when you knew him?
No. I think that his health had a lot to do with it. And he must have, he was there after I left, I think.
I'm not too sure.
I think he was, and he was in reasonably good health all the time that I knew him. But then I think that could be attributed to the attitude that you say. I think that could be attributed definitely to his health.
It might have applied regardless of where he'd what he had done.
Yes, but he wasn't cynical at all about education, and I know he enjoyed it as much as I did.
Well, I always detected that as a student anyway.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Didn't he used to bet milkshakes?
Milkshakes, anything you wanted to bet, if he figured he had, Nobody very often beat him at it either.
Yeah. Well, I can say this, I think I missed him more. That is, after he was gone, than practically anybody that I know. Because if I had something that I couldn't see through, it's like that book I had, that book on plants that I told you, whether it was fact or fiction. And you'd talk with him a while, and I remember when I got that book, I thought, I wish old Herb was still here. I'd really know.
He was a good source for validating things for you.
Yes.
Let me ask another question now. You would have been in the current junior high then from 44, 45, either of you, up through 1958 when you went to the new high school. So we're talking about a period of 55, 59, say 14, 15 years. What was the transition like to the new high school? Of course, it was a brand new building, but even so, what were some of your thoughts and feelings at the time about the brand new high school and the shift?
Well, it was nice to be in a really clean place. I don't know. Of course, it was different for me because I had a chance finally to teach Latin again, which I had missed for many years. And I think the classes were so enjoyable too, because the students all respected the new building, and you could tell that they enjoyed being there. And for 2 or 3 years, they really seemed different. Like different attitude.
Like the days the kids wear ties and fancy clothes to get pictures taken, a noticeable change in the discipline.
And trying to keep things new looking. And it was just a nice atmosphere.
Any seeming comments that you remember that are outstanding about teachers, or just sometimes the newness of having to change can make people a little uneasy and so forth? Is there any of that at all? Or are the teachers and staff in general seem to be looking forward to moving up there?
Oh.
Any reluctance evidence at all?
Oh no.
I don't think so.
I don't think anybody. I don't think you could find anybody that was would want to go back down there.
I was in both, you know. I don't have a choice now.
Yeah.
How did a gentleman like yourself that had been locked up in a cubbyhole teaching chemistry all of a sudden now the facilities at the senior high, what effects did that have on you?
Well, it was really great, and we had a great number of meetings when they were planning in the planning of it, and it was a lot easier teaching because of the way we could handle the equipment, and you could keep it looking a little better up there. It was a lot easier to keep things put away, and that's Burl won't think that sounds like me, but in the laboratory and when I worked there, everything was alphabetized, and if I needed a chemical, I could go in and I knew right where it was, or needed a piece of equipment, I knew where it was. It just gave you more time for teaching, that's all.
When you say you had a lot of previous meetings, Helen Thorpe indicated that she had a lot to say, and so the other women with regard to the library, where a door would be or where rooms would be and so forth. Did you have that kind of...
Yes, we all were asked to help plan our rooms or our departments, things that we would like in them. And
it was, I believe, a couple of years, weren't there, that we had had long meetings after school.
Well, didn't you go to different schools and visit some of the labs, and then you designed your own room?
Well, I designed everything except the shower. That was kind of a surprise to me. The architect stuck a shower in one corner there, and it wasn't. I don't know if it's ever been used or not, but I have nothing to do with that. With the plan.
Otherwise, though, layouts
they
of tables.
Pretty well. Yeah. Oh well, we wanted Herb and I both wanted to, you know, in the meetings, fume hoods so that the fumes would go away. But we couldn't get that. I guess it was too much. It was too expensive to have where a student worked, have the fumes taken away right where he worked.
Sure.
So the lab is planned around the outside edge so that if a student here makes a mistake, it's a safety measure. In a U, instead of having tables in the middle, the lab, the place where they work, they're either facing a wall or a window, and then you can't damage the youngster across from you by an explosion, so that it cuts down the chance of having accidents.
Well, how much of that room would you say just as a crude percentage was based on recommendations you made? 50% or most of it?
90%.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, and
yeah.
They did take the teacher's
oh, yeah.
experience and desired into account.
Oh, definitely. Yeah.
Well, that's nice to know.
Yeah.
There's been so many alterations. The reason I'm concerned now, because other than in the science wing, I think that's about one part that's pretty much the way it always was, every other room has been altered, or windows removed, or doors removed, or partitions put in, and that sort of thing. So it kind of destroyed somewhat the thinking that went into the building for 1959. Of course, things have changed. Maybe they fit better now.
Yes.
Anyway. Mrs. Tarr, you mentioned that you took a job at the high school with the understanding that dramatics was part of it. How did it come to pass that you picked up the Latin classes at the high school in 1958?
When we went to the new building, it was just a 3-year high school. And so the first year of Latin was still down in the old building. So the Helen Redinger, who was teaching Latin, stayed down there, and I started then with the second year Latin. We had just 2 years. I taught second year Latin in the new building. Well, then after they moved the freshmen up to the new building, which was what year, I don't know, about 2 or 3 years after we were there?
Yes, I think.
Then I had all of the Latin. Yeah, first and second year.
Had to have been after 61, because there weren't any freshmen there a lot after I graduated. So it was probably about 3 years.
Maybe 4.
And you asked a while ago about everything else having been changed. Well, it was planned as a 3-year high school,
mm-hmm.
and then someone decided that the freshmen should be there, and that's what caused all the alterations
mm-hmm.
that you spoke about.
The overcrowding.
About the later, they overcrowded, and then they had to improvise, and so that is what made so many of the changes that you spoke about.
See, that would have happened while I was in college. For the say, there was still 3 year when I graduated in 61, I still don't know for sure just why that change took place. Was it the fact that they felt that 4 years at the high school wasn't as crowded as 3 years jammed into the old junior high? That's probably it. At any rate, the freshmen lined up at the senior high sometime in the early 60s. The four-year high school and the junior high winds up with seventh and eighth. It's been that way ever since. Another thing about Latin, I know that after a while I did away with Latin altogether. Is there some story there that you can tell that explains what happened and why you think it died off? Was it a national thing and Salem just fell in line, or what?
In 1970, they dropped the Latin. That was the year, that was why I retired, really. They said the trend in the schools was to do away with Latin. But I never could quite understand that. I think probably many schools didn't have Latin because they couldn't get Latin teachers. But I never could understand, when you had a Latin teacher, why it should be dropped. Of course, the classes were getting smaller. I think one reason for that was because they were, had done away with Latin in the Mass at the Catholic Church, because practically all of the students that we got from St. Paul's School signed up for Latin. But I really don't know other than that. I know that, well, even in the 60s, that a guidance counselor down at the junior high used to tell, well, he'd try to discourage the boys and girls from signing up for Latin because he said it was a dead language.
That was the phrase that he used.
Right. Is there any such thing as a dead language?
Oh,
I don't know.
Every plant and tree and an animal and bird has a Latin name. And
well, I mean, aside from Latin, really no language is dead if anybody's able to speak it and read it.
I know that was told to a girl who, well, her mother made her take it anyhow. And she just recently got her Ph.D. in what?
Something related to biology, a Ph.D. in biology.
Well, that speaks for itself.
Mm-hmm.
I took Latin 1 with Miss Redinger in room 312, and being basically not very bright, I know I was in your room about 2 weeks, and I'd forgotten more Latin over 3 months of summer than I should have, or maybe that was quite normal, I don't know. Did you have to struggle with the Latin 1 kids the next year?
Yes, it was difficult.
I would think it'd be frustrating.
To know just what they had, what they hadn't, what they had missed. And
I thought I'd done quite well. You know, the one thing, and we didn't get into actual literature and anything like that, but I know my vocabulary expanded tenfold, and I won't have anybody tell me that my increased reading skills as a result of that Latin 1, whether I lost a lot of the declensions and all that sort of thing over the summer, doesn't matter, because I retained, even now, I still have my Latin. I bought one, even the old brown Latin 1 book, and I can still glance through paragraphs, at least get a half reasonable idea.
Well, it's logically that it would help build vocabulary, because they say, I think it's about 65% of the of our words came originally from the Latin. Maybe.
Do you have much contact with Miss Redinger? Do you remember anything? I understand she's now had 2 strokes, and I was trying to get a hold of her for an interview, and I just had to give up on it.
I didn't know that. I haven't seen her for a long, long time.
Did you work any at all closely with her? Down at the
other
school?
Well, not very much, except when we would have our meetings. You know, once a month, I think, we had a meeting in the language department, and of course, all the language teachers were there together.
You mentioned, or I've mentioned Herb Jones, and I can tell, since your husband, of course, had more experience personally with him, the high respect and regard for him. Going back to the mid-40s, when you first came into the school system, in that period, say up until the time you moved up to the new high school, are there any other teachers that you particularly admired, or that you especially respected, or felt that there was that general feeling toward them?
Well, when I first came, I think Ethel Beardmore helped me a lot. She taught history, but what they expected, and just general.
Mm-hmm.
And Mildred Hollett, whose homeroom was right next to mine at that time, I think helped. And Helen Thorpe and I worked together in sophomore English for many years. And I think those would be the main ones that I...
Beardmore, Hollett?
Hollett, H-O-L-L-E-T-T.
And Miss Thorpe, you recall. Frank, you have any names to add to that besides Herb Jones?
Oh, yes. Yeah. Oh, boy, there were lots of them in that area. There was John Olivan came back from the service, and he was a terrific biology teacher. And Alethea Cox, whose book I think is still standard in the state of California, and I knew that, and Miss McCready in math, I knew from hearing kids talk in laboratory while they were working. I had a pretty good slant on
bug.
Yes, and there was Mr. Allen in taught general science. He taught general science at that time. Mm-hmm. And
Alton Allen,
and he was a terrific guy. And you're talking about just teaching, that is, the classroom teachers that were,
yeah, right,
that were extremely outstanding.
I might mention Lois Lehman, who was the librarian, and she was very helpful, and she really had a nice library.
Now, I can't get off the subject of Alethea Cox since you brought the name up. I had a delightful hour and 10-minute interview with Mrs. Cope, who was extremely close to her.
Mm-hmm.
And she mentioned the story of how the lady had such extensive notes and so forth that some book publishing agent was in the office one day and happened to see all these things printed up and thought to make a good biology text, which was really a coincidental thing too, because companies were looking for them at that time. Did you know, either one of you know her otherwise, and just the fact that she was in the building and taught biology, did you know her personally at all or anything about her at the time?
Well, I didn't know. Outside of school, no.
Yeah.
I didn't really.
I understand her mother was the one that they used for the profile of this.
Yes, that's, I've heard
related.
That.
Mm-hmm.
So I learned a lot of little inside things about Alethea. Maybe Doris would be better equipped because she was.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
Well, Doris worked
yeah.
and taught. She
the hospital work. And so on.
Well, didn't she teach biology?
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
They were down in the basement on the south side,
right,
where home ec and the sciences. Now that was all one long
yeah.
biology operation.
Well, sure. Mrs. Strain was her. When you mentioned that part of the building, her rooms down there were so tastefully, decorated, the home economics part of it. And the kids liked her a lot. And she was rather strict, I think, but the appearance of the room when you go in, you got a good feeling as though this is proper and this is what it should be.
Now, when I talked to you on the phone, and this will be primarily directed at you, Frank, you mentioned your association with track and also the Key Club. I'd like to touch on both of those for a minute. You mentioned having talked with Joe Kelly.
Yeah.
Was there any association there between Joe Kelly and yourself and your introduction to sports, or was it strictly on your own
through
the school?
Joe and Ben Barrett and I, Ben was the head coach in football when I came, and Joe was his assistant, and then I helped out in football. I was another assistant, and there were three of us that coached football, those three. And then we had help from former students that would come out Then the businessman, Tim Hoppus, used to do the scouting, and I used to help with the scouting. And so that was the staff at that particular time for football.
Was that Tim Hoppus or Dutch?
Both of them, both Tim and Dutch.
Tim
and Dutch. And Dutch would come out in after school, but Tim helped only with the scouting, Tim Hoppus.
You mentioned that in addition to football, though, you got involved in track. How'd that come about?
Well, that was Mr. Cope was coaching track for several years after we came, and then a fellow by the name of Troy Penner came, and I'm not sure whether Troy Penner was here one or two.
Okay.
About Mr. Penner.
Yeah, he said he left to go into business.
Yeah, he left to go into business, and then I started to coach track, and coached for, I don't know how many, five, six years, I don't know. And then after that, I stayed on and I assisted Mr. Newton. I was Mr. Newton's assistant when Mr. Newton, was Mr. Newton track coach?
Yeah. You mean?
Bing.
Bing Newton. And
that was just the last year you were here.
Oh, what?
Yeah. Let's say Carl Zeller was here.
Yeah.
Who was after you then? Who took
I think Carl.
Carl Zeller. Because he was track coach when I was in school.
Yeah.
Then Bing picked it up when Zeller went to Kent State.
Okay. But then I had also coached when I first came in 1944. I coached freshman basketball for 4 or 5 or 6 years.
Mm-hmm.
And then was an assistant. I took care of the reserve team when Mr. Miller was coaching during the time. And then I was a freshman coach 1 year that Mr. Cabas was here, and then I stopped the basketball.
Well, you must have had an interest in athletics in the first place.
Yes.
You've been a former athlete. Can you give me a few comments about that?
Well, I played football and baseball and competed in track and managed a basketball team when I was in college. And I was also a trainer.
Everything but the athletic.
How did he have time to study?
Yeah, well, and I also was a team trainer. And I had been associated with athletics. I participated in high school.
Being modest, I know.
No. I participated in high school. And then we had the pretty good track teams in college. We had one fellow that was in school when I was that was third in the decathlon in the nation. And he was a tremendous interest in it, a fellow by the name of Elliot. And then I'd go sometimes with him on the trips and just to compete, to get the experience and so forth. And I competed in the Penn Relays. I got to the finals one time in the Penn Relays, which was a big national meet.
Yeah.
And got to the finals in 100, but didn't place. So I always enjoyed athletics, and I had the energy to actually do it.
Now, what about Key Club, since you mentioned that on the phone? I would have forgotten all about that.
I think a man by the name of Merrill, who's still here in the insurance business, came to the high school and needed a sponsor. With what organization? With Kiwanis.
Chuck Merrill?
Yeah, Chuck.
Okay.
And he came.
When was this now?
It would be in the annuals, Tim, but I...
Well, I mean...
In the early 60s.
Yeah, in the early 60s, it was in the new building.
Yeah.
And so they needed somebody to sponsor it, and they asked me, and I was the first sponsor when it was when it was formed.
What all of that involved as far as your part of it?
Well, you had to attend their meetings and the projects, and act as a kind of an advisor on the projects that they actually had. I think they were the ones that originated Quaker Sam. I think it was a key club.
I knew it was in existence at the time.
Yeah.
I think somebody asked me about getting in it once. I was kind of a bashful, not get involved type anyway. But I never did know what the key club was all about.
Well, it's a service organization. Like, you know, for instance, Kiwanis built your swimming pool. Wasn't it Kiwanis that was influential in building a swimming pool?
I think everybody was involved, but they carried the load.
They carried the load, and then the Key Club was to student participation in activities.
Like a service club.
Service club, like a service club.
Community.
Tremendous thing it is.
How many guys did you have in there, roughly? Did you get a good turnout?
Good membership. I don't remember the actual numbers, but it seems to me there'd be of the original group when it first started, there were 20 or so of the good citizens of the school that wanted to help the school and help their education. Anything that was good for the school, they were for and helped promote it.
Burl in high school down on Lincoln, you had been involved in a couple of years of dramatics, but mm-hmm. Were you involved in any extracurricular items at the high school, the new high school?
I was co-sponsor High Tri for 15 years, maybe?
That's a long time.
Yeah. First with Claire Bell Bickle, and then with Mrs. Milligan. After Claire Bell retired.
This was in existence at the time, or did you help?
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm.
What was all involved in that? As far as
it was a scholarship service club, and the girls were invited to join on the basis of scholarship. I think they had to have a 3-point average for their... must have been 4 or 5 semesters, I think, or something of that sort.
Yeah, well, then strictly as upper class?
Yes, they were juniors when they were asked to join.
I see. And this would just fall in the line, much like the Key Club for the boys, was it a service oriented? Or?
Yes, it was a service club. And I know there was one time, well, 2 or 3 years, we discuss this back and forth. Mr. Ludwig felt that it shouldn't have been scholarship. He wanted it to be just service and open to all of the girls. And at that time, they had already started the YWCA, and which was open to anyone who wished to, be a member. And we felt that there was nothing else for scholarship, that we still wanted to keep that part of it. And so Mr. Ludwig wouldn't give in, and Claire Bell and I wouldn't give in, and so it just went on that way, and it's still the same. Still scholarship service.
That's still a nice city girls with their jackets, so it's still an operational functioning organization.
Mm-hmm. It still does.
Well, that's good. Somebody won out over Beam and Ludwig. That's not too many people around who can say that. He told me himself that he prided himself on getting people to go his way.
Yeah, he was stubborn.
Can I try to tell you a story about how he paid attention to detail?
Yeah, sure.
Just an illustration
of
how what it done. A kid...
excuse me, we're talking about Beam and Ludwig.
We're talking about Beam and Ludwig. A student in... now this is true. I know that this is right. A student in junior high school lost a lock, and they had a number on the lock when they paid their, what did they have to pay? 50 cents, I guess it was about that time. Anyway, we'd moved to the senior high school and had been up there about 2 years, and the lock turned up, and the student was still in, I think, a senior in high school from the either seventh or eighth grade, and then at least 3 years or 4 years had passed. Lock turned up, somebody found it, went into the office, and the lock was returned to the student who had originally paid for it and lost his money down there, and Beeman returned his money.
So he had a record of
that, and he was able to find it, and he paid terrific attention to details.
He prides himself on it. In his interview, I asked him what he felt his greatest contribution was, and he said that he knew what everybody was up to and so forth at the time, and kept track of all things.
And that's why he's the best. I said Mr. Kerr was the best superintendent I ever worked under. Mr. Beeman is the best principal I ever, or Mr. Ludwig, yeah, is the best principal that I ever worked.
He used to irritate the teachers quite often.
He irritated a lot of times.
Yeah. But he was really
a lot of times.
Good leader has to make enemies.
Yes,
too.
And he was.
I respected him as a student. I know the kids made fun of him because he had a funny laugh, it doesn't matter.
He wore, and one thing, this is how it changes. He used to wear ties just like you're wearing, and they didn't like those ties.
Yeah,
they were out of style, but now they're...
He's laughing at us.
But
I remember one day I went down to the office. I was in a hurry leaving school, and I had to get an excuse in to be off the next day. I was asking a kid out front of the office there in a new high school, is Callahan in his office? And just the kid didn't hear me or ask me again. I said it louder the second time, and just then Mr. Ludwig stepped through, and he was on the way someplace. He heard me say, "Is Callahan in his office?" And he turned around and says, "It's Mr. Callahan, Jim."
Uh-huh.
And I didn't know he even knew who I was. He had no reason. I'd never been in his office or anything else. He knew my first name and called me on that, and told him from now on it was Mr. Callahan, not just the last name. Both of you represent a lot of years in teaching, not just in Salem, but having come from other locations. You brought experience to Salem and increased that experience here. I want to ask you both two final questions and finish up. During your teaching career in Salem, I'm just interested in 1944 up to 45 up. To your time of retirement, what would you say, just briefly, were the most noticeable or most significant changes during your teaching career here in Salem, whether it be staff or administration or students? Is there anything that comes to mind? I know that's a rather general, broad question, but what you would consider significant changes from your perspective over those number of years in the mid-40s on through?
Go ahead, Jeff.
Oh, yeah. You mentioned that you might not be in a position to make a clear statement.
A clear statement about, as far as the change in attitude of students, 4 years after I had retired, I came back and taught sophomores biology. That was when Mr. Cabas was promoted to principal. I finished the year for him. And I noticed a change in the attitude. I had never had much trouble with disciplinary problems, but I had a feeling that a small percentage of the students were actually working at being obnoxious. In other words, they go out of their way to be obnoxious and to disrupt class. And there's one incident. Mr. Cabas had a student assistant in the class, and the students were coming in, and they were exceedingly noisy. There had been something that had stirred them up anyway, and I told them that I I wanted them to come in an orderly manner and go to their seats. I said, we don't want any yelling or pushing or anything like that. And I heard a voice at about half level say, you're goddamn right we don't. And I couldn't spot who it was. I thought it was one of the students, but I found out later that it was this student assistant who had actually done it. So after that, it appeared that there had been a sort of a change in attitude, especially someone who was chosen to assist the teacher. What it was a student assistant. And I forget now how I determined it. Yes, I heard him speak later, and I was able to point, and there's the voice, and I asked him if he was the one that did it, and he said yes.
I wonder, too, you mentioned since you taught chemistry, you really had more, not a select group, but you had a little...
Yeah. Well, I had been retired about 5 years when I suddenly realized that it wasn't because I was any better disciplinarian than anybody else. I had had just the upper half. I dealt with only the upper half and the better group of students.
Upper class, and then people took elective chemistry.
Sure, yes. It was that I had elective, and the ones that gave the other teachers all the trouble, I just didn't have to contact with. But I was so stupid not to know that before.
You have a comment in that area, and then I'll ask my final question.
Well, I said before that one reason I retired was because they were dropping Latin from the schedule. The other reason probably was the change in student attitude and the increase in discipline problems in the English classes. I had no problems in Latin, but in junior English, that was right at the time that they were having the unrest on the college campuses, and I think it was carrying over. One example that one day they were arguing about whether window shades should be up or down, and somebody would get up and put them up and someone would pull them down, and I finally walked over and fixed them the way I thought they should be. And one boy put his hand up and said, we have our rights. And they would question the way I was teaching, what I was teaching. They didn't like the tests, just about everything. Yeah. And they just tried very hard to
make
be rather
miserable.
Nasty. Mm-hmm.
I don't want to end this, what I consider to be a delightful almost hour, on a negative note. I want to ask you one final question with the total years experience the two of you have had. What, as you look back over the years teaching, regardless of whether it's in Salem or not, what would you indicate as your most rewarding experiences as a teacher? What do you look back at and remember as highlights or as the significant things of having been a classroom teacher for a good many years?
Well, student contacts that were made, and some of them are still very close, just as we feel that you and Nancy are close friends of ours, and of course that was school contact. We have students from Madison, where we were before, who married and now live in Houston, Texas. We still have contacts with them. And things of that sort are lasting. Feeling that we have been able to help students choose the right career for them sometimes, and done what we can to guide them the right way.
Right.
Well, I agree with Burl that is contacts after with former students, and don't know whether this would be part of it, but I had a great experience after I retired teaching math and to 7th and 8th graders at St. Paul's after I had retired, and that was a tremendous experience. I got the enthusiasm there that I tried to get in teaching when I was actually teaching even before I retired. Mm-hmm. That's their recent memories, of course, and then those students, the enthusiasm that those students had for math, and they had never had any of this particular math before. It was the beginning of it for them, and the time went even faster when I was teaching at St. Paul's than it did in the regular high school.
So then it's the personal element that comes down to really with contact with students,
yeah,
during and after,
yeah,
after the years you put in.
Yeah.
And in my case, with teachers, this isn't true of Frank so much, but maybe someone else mentioned it. There are about 11 of the retired women teachers who had been together in both buildings. We get together once a month for a little coffee social hour, and that's very.
Well, did you tell them the name?
Well, we call ourselves the retarded teachers.
You don't have to explain anything. I'd like to publicly thank both of you for helping me with this and what's turned out to be number 20 of 20 delightful conversations with people I respect most, and that's teachers in general, but teachers that I know I've had something to do with the system I'm in right now. I appreciate it very much, and I do thank you.
Well, that was
very good.